You break up with someone, and suddenly every memory is framed as proof that they never really cared. Or you get into an argument with your mom, and you leave convinced once again that she just doesn't get you. Or maybe you walk into a work meeting with the story that your boss doesn't respect you, and now every glance or tone of voice becomes more evidence. If this sounds familiar, you're in the right place, because that's confirmation bias. And it's working hand in hand with a set of mental strategies called defense mechanisms. Together, they keep you feeling justified and self-protected, but they also keep you stuck and locked inside the same limiting beliefs about yourself and everyone around you. Today, I'll explain what confirmation bias really is, how your defense mechanisms support it, and my top five research-backed steps to interrupt your confirmation bias so you can create joyful, connected, happy relationships. So stay tuned.
I'm Dr. Abby Metcalf, and I'm a practicing psychologist, number one Amazon best-selling author, TEDx speaker, and all-around relationship maven with over 35 years of experience helping people just like you. Join me as I teach you actionable tips and strategies to create connection, joy, and ease in all your relationships. So let's get to it.
Welcome back to the podcast. I promised you in last week's podcast that I would talk about confirmation bias soon. And so we have rearranged the schedule to make this one come out right after that last, the last one. So if you, and all the episodes stand on their own. So don't worry if you haven't listened to last week, but I've been just talking a lot about defense mechanisms and how not to be defensive. That's what the podcast last week was about. So if you want to learn how to not be defensive when you talk, go listen there. But today we're, so some of this will be a tiny bit overlapping, which I think is good. That's why I tried to put them together. We're going to really go deep on confirmation bias and what's really going on. So let's talk first. What is it? What is confirmation bias? And confirmation bias is a what we call, we psychologists or, you know, people in my profession call a cognitive distortion, meaning, so where you're favoring information that confirms your existing beliefs, your existing expectations, assumptions, and at the same time, you start ignoring or minimizing or explaining away anything that contradicts what you believe. So in psychological terms, confirmation bias is considered a type of, we could call it motivated reasoning, where your perception and memory are shaped by these internal desires you have, you know, what you really want to be true or is, rather than objective reality and logic. So basically, it'll lead you to give, you know, greater weight to something that supports the beliefs you already have and to discount or overlook anything that challenges those beliefs. So let's try to talk today, Abby. Yeah, I'm going to give it my best shot. So your confirmation bias operates on three levels. And again, a lot of times it's not, you know, if people aren't going deep on it, they're not talking about all the ways it shows up. So it operates really on three levels. One is selective attention, where we notice evidence that confirms what we believe. So we pay kind of selective attention. The second is selective interpretation. So we interpret anything that's sort of ambiguous, any information that comes in that could kind of go either way, we interpret it in a way that supports our beliefs. We decide that that's what it means. And three, what we call selective memory. So that's where you only recall details that fit that your narrative. And you'll do that much more easily than anything that contradicts that. And here in the United States, we are, as I'm recording this, in a lot of upheaval politically with a very, you know, people who have really gone to each side of a, like a poll. Because of these confirmation biases, not only, there's a lot of reasons why, but one of the things that happens when you just can't understand how people could think something, even with, evidence, like evidence that says it's not like that. And they minimize it, you know, that that's evidence that what they believe isn't true, or that, well, I don't understand, you know, here it is. I don't want to go into a lot of details because I'll just make this political conversation, which we could have another time if you want. And it gets really messy and people can't understand why people aren't listening. And confirmation bias has a lot to do with that. So, and the big problem is that you're not even aware you're doing it. You think you're seeing evidence to support your beliefs, but your beliefs are making you see certain evidence and not see other facts. And depending on how strong and definite your confirmation bias is, right, you can see how it gets in the way. Everybody has confirmation bias. It's just a case of whether or not you have enough self-awareness, enough mindfulness, enough, you know, curiosity, enough what I would call emotional intelligence to understand that you have it, so that when you see or hear things or someone gives you a different view of something, that you can actually sit for a moment and question and go, oh, I thought this, maybe it's this. Let me think about that for a second. So that's what that is. So let's talk about why it happens. there's a neuroscience of being right. Confirmation bias isn't just, it's not just like a thinking error. It's really deeply tied to how our brains are wired. And it happens for three sort of primary reasons from the research. And as always, all the research that I talk about is linked on, go to my website, abbymetcalf.com, and you'll find it on with the corresponding blog for this episode, which is on the Relationship Tips and Tools page and or on the podcast page. And I do have a great giveaway today, another quiz. I did a quiz for last week's and people love a quiz generally. So I'm doing another one for this week's, but I'll talk about that later. So three main reasons, again, from the research. One is what we call cognitive efficiency. So your brain is pretty much a prediction machine, if you want to think of it that way. It processing every piece of information. If it was to process every piece of information neutrally, that would take a lot of time and energy. So it builds shortcuts to conserve effort. And once you have a belief about something, you know, my partner is selfish, all women are gold diggers, your boss doesn't value you, I'm not good at relationships, whatever. Once you have a belief like that, your brain starts scanning for information that reinforces that belief, and it becomes easier and faster to keep that story alive than to reevaluate it. It's a shortcut. And this shortcut process is largely handled by a part of our brain called the prefrontal cortex, which is involved in decision-making, values, judgment, complex reasoning. But when you're under emotional stress, the amygdala, another part of your brain, your brain's, you know, alarm system, we've called it, will come and hijack all that rational thinking. Your prefrontal cortex and your amygdala are never online at the same time. You're either in one or the other. So if your amygdala comes in and hijacks that rational thinking because you're in high stress or anxiety or something else, now that my rational thinking is gone and those biases are even more entrenched. And this creates a feedback loop, okay? So emotion fuels your beliefs. Belief distorts your perception. Perception justifies emotion, right? It goes in like this little loop. All right, the second reason this happens is really for emotional safety. Believing something is certain, even if it's painful, can feel safer than facing any kind of uncertainty. I've said before, our brains hate uncertainty with a passion of the burning sun. Your brain hates uncertainty because, again, millions of years ago, or even hundreds of thousands, or even tens of thousands of years ago, when there was a lot of uncertainty, you were probably going to die, right? If you weren't certain where food was coming from, water, shelter, you know, if things were uncertain politically, if there was uncertainty, you literally have a part of your brain that its whole job is to look for ambiguity and uncertainty, right? So your brain hates it and likes to be certain. Your brain is always trying to reduce any kind of ambiguity, any kind of confusion. We're not sure, you know, it could be this or that. If you believe people always leave, or that you're unlovable, your brain prefers that the discomfort of that belief to the vulnerability of hoping for something better and being disappointed. I know. I'm sorry. Yes. And there's been a lot of studies. Studies have shown that confirmation bias is stronger when our beliefs are tied to our personal identity or deeply held emotions. So this is big. Again, if you think of the political climate here in the United States, there's a lot of personal identity that gets involved, especially with our President Trump. You know, people who it's like their whole person. Some people, it's like their whole personality is this man. So again, and then all this confirmation bias that goes along with it. So and I'm not saying everyone who voted for Trump does this. I'm saying we all know a huge or a faction of the population that does this. So, and again, these deeply held emotions and what that is. So it's confirmation bias really takes over. And the more invested you are in being right, the harder it is for your brain to let in any kind of contradictory evidence, any kind at all. I know. So it's really, it's why conversations, again, I'm just thinking of politically because they're so obvious, but it's why any conversation like that can make you feel crazy. Okay. And then the third reason is reward chemistry. So being right, believe it or not, feels good because it triggers your brain's, how do we say it? I always say this wrong word. I always say this word wrong. It's dopaminergic. I'm trying to remember the word. It's our brain's dopamine reward pathways. Dopaminergic. I think that's how we say it. Sorry. I feel like I should know this because what I do. But it does trigger those brain's dopamine pathway, reward pathways, and particularly in a part of your brain called your ventral striatum. And there's one, when I was researching for today's podcast, I read this one study. It was it was a functional MRI study, fMRIs at USC. Like Kaplan, Gimbel, and Harris. I don't know. I'll link to it in the notes. They found that people's reward centers lit up when they encountered information that confirmed their political beliefs, suggesting that confirmation bias, right? It's not just cognitive, but like pleasurable. I know. Isn't that nuts? So anyway, I think that's why a lot of what I read about confirmation bias, a lot of the research, the newer research had a lot to do with politics. Which makes sense given the state of the United States, because I was reading a lot of research from here in the US. So anyway, just really interesting, right? Really kind of fascinating. So when your brain locks in on a belief, it literally rewards you for keeping it, regardless of whether it's accurate or helpful in your life. I know. So just let that sink in for a minute. So I say all this because I don't want you to beat yourself up. I want you to realize that, again, you should overcome it. You know, we need to work on this, but there's something very biological going on. Okay. So let's talk about how defense mechanisms reinforce confirmation bias. Okay. So, and again, I did an entire episode on defense mechanisms. I also talked about them last week. I'll link to it, but defense mechanisms are basically unconscious strategies that your psyche uses to protect you from emotional pain, from conflict, from unacceptable impulses. Defense mechanisms. Sigmund Freud made them famous. He originally introduced these concepts, but they've been expanded on a lot in modern psychology, et cetera. So there, as much as a lot of what Sigmund Freud originally said was, I think, a lot of hokum. There's a lot that he said that was really great and brilliant. He was obviously very brilliant, but that we've looked at now and we've really been able to, quote unquote, like prove and have research about, which is really what I care about. So when your confirmation bias is running the cognitive show, you know, is running your thinking brain, your defense mechanisms really play like a supporting role, and they help you hold on to distorted beliefs, by shielding you from discomfort, from guilt, from vulnerability. And again, I'd really love for you to go back and listen to the episode I did on defense mechanisms, but I want to hit on a few of the more popular ones right now. And I did create a great giveaway for today. It's a quiz that I'm calling What's Your Go-To Defense Mechanism? I know, isn't that cute? It's a little quiz. Because as I always say, if you can, any of this stuff, you know, labeling ourselves with our attachment style, or I don't, you know, I'm sure all of us have taken the Myers-Briggs, you know, I'm an ENFP. You know, it's so much fun to kind of have some self-reflection and that kind of thing. And my test is not normed on millions of people. It's a quiz I created myself, you know, come on. And so it's not like it's, you know, it's like a real test somewhere. Just know that. But it's a great way to have some self-reflection, I hope, to have some self-awareness and just to be thoughtful. That's why. And I did a quiz because in the past, you all have said to me, we love when you give us a quiz. So I did it last week and this week. Don't expect it every week, but sometimes it's fun. All right. So let's talk about a few of the defense mechanisms. Denial is probably the most common one we talk about. And that's really just the refusal to accept reality or facts. And really blocking external events from your awareness. I want to be clear, denial is not lying to yourself. It is, you really believe it. So maybe you don't believe the relationship is over. I've had people do that. You ignore that your child is struggling with anxiety. I've had a lot of times someone has come to me with a kid. I've had instances where I've had a client or someone come to me where a kid they've known has tried to kill themselves seemingly out of nowhere. And there was actually a lot of signs before. I will say if someone really tries to kill themselves, there's often not right then, but usually earlier when they're really struggling through the depression before they've made a decision. And I've had parents crying in my office or friends on the phone, just like, how did I miss this? How did I miss? And it is how denial works. Denial's real. It's too painful. Your brain, maybe this parent didn't know what to do about this, or maybe there was a stigma around mental health they didn't want to deal with. Who knows? And there's just this denial. And so sort of not seeing it. I know it sounds crazy, but it's really not seeing it. You might minimize a friend's toxic behavior. I've talked to a lot of you who are in toxic relationships, and it takes so long sometimes to get out of them because of denial of some of it, like just not believing it, especially when a relationship has changed over time, when it starts one way and then goes to another way. And when you pair denial with confirmation bias, you're going to interpret all neutral or negative evidence in a way that reassures you nothing's wrong. You know, it's a short-term coping mechanism in its moment that is going to reduce any of your psychological distress, right? But ultimately delays any kind of adaptive problem solving. And I would say that sometimes there's even a denial when people overeat or eat things that they really like to eat, but make them sick, things like that I've seen. It's just very interesting. It's like, this time will be different. This time will be different. Projection is another common defense mechanism I see. That's what happens when you sort of attribute your own feelings or thoughts that feel probably unacceptable to you onto someone else or something else. So if you're feeling insecure in your parenting, you might accuse your partner of being critical even when they're not. Or if you're angry at a parent but don't want to admit it, you may interpret them as angry or controlling, right? I always think back to when I work in hospitals and rehabs and things. Invariably, someone say, my counselor hates me. And it was like, you hate your counselor. I got to tell you, I very rarely met a counselor who like hate, or a nurse or something, who like hates a patient or a client. It just doesn't work that way. We sort of know that people, depending on what kind of work you do and how acute right? It is how close to like trauma it is that people are going to come in with a lot of problems and a lot of issues and whatever. We're trained for that. You know, we don't, but I've had so many patients and clients say, oh, this person hates me. The doctor hates me, whatever. It's usually because you don't like them. Just want to say. And so the confirmation, when that's happening, your confirmation bias helps you sort of spot the signs that prove your story about them hating you or whatever, right? You see how that works? I know. Rationalization is another common defense mechanism. And that's what happens when, you know, you offer logical sounding explanations to justify, again, kind of unacceptable behavior or feelings. So you might lash out at your teen, but tell yourself, it's because they weren't listening or they drove me to it or they needed a wake-up call. You know, rationalization allows you to maintain your image of being like a reasonable, loving person, while confirmation bias filters in only the evidence that supports that justification, right? I know, sort of brilliant. Minimization. That's another one I see a lot of. That's what happens when you, another defense mechanism that happens when you downplay. Let's try downplay, Abby. When you downplay the significance of an event or the significance of an emotion, again, to protect yourself from any kind of psychological discomfort, you tell yourself, you know, it's not that big a deal. Maybe that your sibling never checks in with you or that mother or father never went to any of your sporting events as a kid, whatever. Or you dismiss your partner's withdrawal by saying, oh, everyone gets tired. You know, your confirmation bias will then ignore or underplay any kind of emotional data that comes up that could signal a deeper problem. And again, then later you get, quote unquote, blindsided by something or something shockingly happens or seems to happen overnight. So,
if you're anything like me, you're bad at asking for help, like weirdly bad at it. I've been a busy gal for a long time now. Kids, partner, my own business, all the things that make for a full life these days. And my instinct always was to just white knuckle it and do it all myself. But I say it on this show all the time. Ask for help. You don't have to do it all. And meanwhile, there I was doing it all. And I finally changed all that, from my podcast editor to the person who got 10 years of photos off my phone and into albums I actually look at. I found amazing people to help me on Upwork, and I've been using them for the last 8 years. And you don't need a business for any of this, any project, any size, planning an event, sorting out something at home, finally handling the thing on your list you keep avoiding. Upwork lets you find, hire, and pay expert freelancers all in one place. With Business Plus, you can access the top 1% of talent on Upwork, and with AI-powered shortlisting, you'll get matched to the right freelancer in under 6 hours. No endless searching required. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to connect with top talent ready to help you and your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
Let's talk about how confirmation bias shows up in different relationships, because I've definitely noticed it in a different ways. And I think people don't always identify it. So with romantic partners, you know, if you believe your partner is emotionally unavailable, you'll focus on every moment they don't ask how your day went, right? And you'll ignore the times they cook you dinner or initiate affection. Your confirmation bias is going to only select the evidence that supports your narrative. So, and then meanwhile, right, defense mechanisms like projection, you know, accusing them of never trying, or denial, maybe even pretending you're not hurt, those are going to kick in to avoid confrontation, to avoid vulnerability. And again, I mentioned this last week's podcast, our episode, but I want to say again that the reticular activating system, or your RAS for short, also plays an active biological role in reinforcing confirmation bias. Confirmation is psychological. It's a psychological construct. Whereas, although it has some biological pieces, right, which we talked about, get that pleasure center getting tickled there. But there's also your reticular activating system, which also reinforces confirmation bias. They work alongside one another. And your RAS is, again, a filter between your conscious and your subconscious. And it's at the part of the four basal ganglia in your brain. Anyway, it's how information is filtered. So what you consciously believe will show up because of what biologically you'll start to look at. I talk about it last week. Go look. I talk about it in a bunch of different, I have a whole chapter in my Boundaries Made Easy book about RAS and other things. So you can go listen there if it interests you. Let's talk about friendships and how it shows up. If you believe that people always abandon you, you might behave anxiously or pull away kind of preemptively in friendships, which subtly is going to push people away. And then they're going to respond probably by creating distance. So then your belief gets confirmed, right? So you might rationalize their silence. They were never that good of a friend anyway. Or even deny, again, that you're upset as a way of dealing with that. So you see, again, confirmation bias and your defenses reinforce one another. With your family dynamics, parents, siblings, if you've always seen your parent as critical, you'll tune in to every raised eyebrow, every unsolicited opinion, and you're going to ignore the gestures of love, support, or appreciation. And I would say projection is really common in these relationships. We accuse our parents of judging us when we're the ones judging ourselves. sibling relationships get tangled in these old, the old childhood narratives. Maybe growing up, your brother was really selfish. But you both moved out when you were 18 and now you're 40. It's like, do you even know this person anymore like you think you do? So if you see your brother as selfish, every miscommunication becomes more evidence, even if his actions were unintentional or even if he did a lot of other things that weren't selfish. Again, this is where we get kind of stuck. In parenting your kids, obviously, confirmation bias, right, can cause you to misread your kid's behavior because you, again, have like a distorted lens. If you believe your kid is lazy, you could miss signs of anxiety, executive functioning issues. I've seen it over and over. You may minimize their struggles, they're just being dramatic or they need to learn tough love. Now you're rationalizing your own reaction, right? They need to learn tough love. Rather than really exploring what's truly going on, rather than asking questions and digging deep. So, I know. Let me have a sip of water. And let's go into, hold on. My five research-backed steps to interrupt confirmation bias and lower your defenses, I would say, right? Okay. Number one is to practice mindfulness and cognitive self-awareness, right? You had to know that there was no way we'd be discussing how to shift confirmation bias without talking about the need to be mindful and work on your blind spots and work on your self-awareness. Again, I did episodes on all those things. I have a meditation starter kit. I have a mindfulness starter kit for free. There is so much information on my YouTube channel, my website about being mindful, increasing your self-awareness. I mean, I'll link to some of it, but there's even more if you put in those keywords. You got to do this work. You have to do this work. But I would say you could start by noticing when you're repeating a story in your head. It could sound like anything with always or never, I would say for sure. They always ignore me. Anything that's very general, I'm not cut out for relationships, all men suck. You should ask yourself, what belief am I trying to confirm right now? What belief am I trying to confirm right now? That's what you want to do. We call this in cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, or what we do generally in therapy is we call this cognitive monitoring. And it's basically, it's a skill that the research shows will reduce these cognitive distortions. This is all a distortion. When you're confirming something, it's not real. When you're in one of your defense mechanisms, one of your, you know, it's all the brain distorting information. So we know that cognitive behavioral therapy reduces cognitive distortions. And more important, I think just as importantly, your emotional reactivity to things. So we got to work on it. I say with love, right? So that first thing, what's the story I'm telling myself about this? Really, really helpful. What's the narrative? And why is it here? And what is it helping me do? And was it hurting? All that great work. And I have a bunch of, as I always do, I have a bundle for today. It's $8 if you want to do a masterclass in confirmation bias. If you think this is really a problem for you, I will list everything that's in it at the very end. So you just have to stay to the end. So, but if you want to go deep, and then that's the way to do it. And of course, if you're my Patreon community, most that depending on the tier you're in, it's all that's free. Number two, step two, is to seek disconfirming evidence on purpose. Okay. I don't know. Is that disconfirming a word? Did I make that up? Someone let me know. Look for stuff that doesn't support what you think is basically what I'm saying here. Okay. You want to make it a regular practice to look for examples that contradict your belief. If you think your partner never shows affection, write down 5 recent acts of kindness. This rewires your brain's tendency towards negativity. It builds cognitive flexibility, which is absolutely a trait linked with emotional resilience, with problem solving. I could go on. You know, the research shows that this kind of what we call a cognitive reappraisal, you know, sort of a rethink of the research shows that if you do that, this cognitive reappraisal or just intentionally shifting your focus in this way, I could say it that way, it activates your prefrontal cortex, which I just talked about, and dampens your emotional reactivity in the amygdala. Remember, I told you they can't be online at the same time. So that's why you want to get your prefrontal cortex to do its job. And then your amygdala will take a back seat and you can actually think clearer. You can really assess things in a real way with true quote unquote evidence, not your confirmation bias, not the RAS working against you. Okay. Number three is I want you to replace judgment with curiosity. You want to ask yourself open-ended questions instead of those sort of declarative statements. I also call these open-ended questions collaborative questions, right? So instead of, my mom is being so distant, I wonder what's going on for my mom right now. See that? Curiosity creates a pause in the automatic cycle and really opens the door for empathy. Can't you just hear the empathy when I went from the declarative statement, my mom's being a bee or whatever, to I wonder what's going on with my mom. I wonder what's happening for her in this situation. You can hear the compassion. You can hear the concern. You can hear the curiosity, and that's what you're looking for. And again, and all of this aligns with mindfulness-based cognitive therapy. If you don't, MBCT, mindfulness-based cognitive behavioral therapy, or MBCBT, it's also called, is an evidence-based approach. It's so good. And this all aligns with that. That's where I'm pulling from the research for this, because MBCBT or MBCT encourages that you, approach your thoughts with openness rather than certainty. You know, you approach your thoughts with curiosity rather than being positive of evidence. And again, there's an abundance, robust research saying this is the path to freeing yourself from things like depression, anxiety, any kind of emotional distress. If you're depressed and you haven't read The Mindful Way Through Depression, I do not know what you're waiting on. That's a change your life book right there. They have a workbook. It's based in the research. It's like Teasdale, Kabat-Zinn. I forget all the authors. Sorry. My Foy Through Depression. It used to have a CD in the back. I don't know where you would play a CD anymore, but it used to have a little CD in the back. I'm not sure. They probably have you linked now to, that's how long I've been reading that book. They probably have you linked now to, like, you know, a website where you can download what used to be on the little CD in the back of the book. But it's brilliant research. It's well done. And it's held the test of time. Even if you have your depression, quote unquote, under control, I would still look to get, and I don't get any money from them, obviously. I hope it's obvious. Anyway, step four, learn your go-to defense mechanism. I think this is really important. You have to notice how you typically respond when you are emotionally threatened. Are you a minimizer? Are you a rationalizer? Do you project? Do you deflect with humor? Oh, is that Abby? Yes, it is. When you name your patterns, you begin to create distance from them. You know, what we, again, psychologists call metacognition, or the ability, metacognition is basically the ability to think about your thinking, which is what the mindfulness is, which is why self-awareness, why I talk about all that. It means that if I'm in an argument with someone or I'm talking to someone and I notice that I'm getting upset, I would, like, it's like a little voice in your head goes, Abby, you are, wow, this is making you hot. Like, you're heated. What's going on? You're coming in hot on this. It's like a third person almost. You know, you're thinking about your thinking. You're noticing how you're doing. And then you have the ability to stop. You have the ability to go, oh, let's just calm down. You know, Gary is giving you feedback. He's not your mother. You know, calm down. Like, you're able to sort of talk it through differently and have a different reaction in the moment. I'm telling you, it's the key to it all. So Once you recognize, oh, I'm rationalizing again, you can ask a new question, which always is, once you recognize that you're using humor to deflect, that you're intellectualizing, that you're in denial, whatever it is, right? Whatever defense mechanism you might be using, you can ask, what you want to ask yourself is, what feeling am I avoiding right now? Anytime you're angry, how's that? Anytime you react in anger, that lasts. I don't mean in a moment. We all get annoyed in a moment. That's healthy. That's fine. But anger that lasts, where you're just like, oh, I just want to kill you, you know, you should ask yourself, what feeling am I avoiding right now? What's my favorite quote? If you've been listening to me for a while, you know my very favorite quote in the world is from the author Celeste Ng, N-G. She wrote Little Fires Everywhere. She's written a bunch of books, but she's brilliant. She wrote, I can't remember what book it was in because I've read all her books, but I think it's in that first one. She wrote that anger is the bodyguard of fear. And I've been quoting that for 10 years, whenever that book came out. I think it's the most brilliant of quotes. Anger is the bodyguard of fear. What feeling am I avoiding right now? Next time you're frustrated, resentful, angry, just do that. Anger is often used as a defense mechanism because it pushes people away, and it pushes ourselves away, us away from ourselves. We don't have to think about our responsibility in something. We don't have to ask ourselves questions. We can't be curious from there because your amygdala has taken over. So you can't use your prefrontal cortex when you're in that space, which is why you often regret later things you said in anger. I know. Yeah. All right. Number five is to get a thought partner, not a cheerleader. Okay. And I say this because I also work with a lot of executives and people in certain positions where I work with quite a few famous people. And boy, they got a lot of people around them who are not thought partners, who are instead cheerleaders. I see people who their best friends are all people they pay. I remember I was really sad watching, what was that Jennifer Lopez movie that came out last year? Whatever. I can't even remember anymore. That documentary she paid for herself. But I remember her going around the room and these were all her best friends and every single one of them was on her payroll. And I thought, and I'm sure she has other friends. I hope she does. I'm hoping she's close to her siblings and whatever. I hope she's in relationships with people she doesn't pay. But just the fact that right there she was saying that, and literally when you went around the room, it's like, oh, she pays this guy, she pays this person. Now, these are all people she spends a lot of time with because they're close, right? But when I thought later about her even making that movie, I think a lot of people told her not to. I don't know. I can't talk about denial, talk about defense mechanisms. And then you're divorced like within 6 months of it coming out. And This is all about our love story. There's something so off, right? There's something so, I say with love, I have no hate for Jennifer Lopez. Don't come for me. But just as a psychologist looking at these things, it's hard to ignore. It is so hard to ignore. It's like, what is up? Like, what world are you living in? You know, it's obviously really far from reality. And my worry, I'm like, Jennifer, give me a call. I'll help you out. Like, I do worry about her. I do. I think, and obviously she's not a client of mine, or I wouldn't be talking about her, that she has a lot of cheerleaders and not a lot of thought partners. If you want to talk to someone who won't just like confirm your bias, but who will, but gently challenge you. Okay. Gently challenge it. Not someone who's after you, not someone who's always the devil's advocate. That's not love. Not just devils in the name, right? I don't like that. I've never had, you know, I talk about my wife, my best friend, right? I've never once had her say, let's play the devil's advocate here, ever. But she will gently challenge things I say or things I think, or, well, she'll ask a question. She'll be curious. Are you sure it's that way? Or, oh, well, what else makes you think that? Or, you know, gently, you can do it gently. So again, or it could be a therapist, a coach, or a wise friend. I'm lucky enough to have a wise friend. Maybe you have a great partner. You want someone, or more than one, if you have it, who can help you expand your lens. That's what you're looking for. And again, research consistently shows that kind of reflective dialogue, that's what we call that, reflective dialogue, improves your emotional regulation. So helps you just regulate your emotions and reduces biased thinking over and over. I know. Come on. So let me wrap it up today. I will tell you that your brain's job is to protect you, but sometimes it does that by keeping you really locked in old stories, old narratives. Confirmation bias and defense mechanisms, they're normal, they're human. I would say that they're necessary at times. But if you're always reinforcing the same painful beliefs, it may be time to trade all that certainty for some curiosity. I can't tell you how many times I've given someone feedback and they're like, oh, that's not it. And I'm like, I'm just inviting you to think different because you don't seem very happy right now. Well, you came to me because you can't seem to keep a relationship. So I'm inviting you to listen to my questions and think about them. I'm inviting you to listen like you're wrong. I'm inviting you to adopt. Do you want to be correct or effective? That usually gets people. That's why I've been saying it for so long and so often, because people can get that. It's like, oh, I might be right. I can still be right. I just want to be effective too. So I'm going to change what I'm doing, right? I want your new default. I want you to go from certainty to curiosity. I want your new default to be, what else could be true? Not is true, what else could be true? That question might be the opening that you and your nervous system need to breathe, to connect, to grow. You know, what else could be true? So there you have it. Definitely would love for you to come get the quiz. What's your go-to defense mechanism, right? You can get that below the video. If you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. And or go to the website. And as always, to the abbymetcalf.com, go to this page on the relationship tips and tools page. I write up a blog where all the research will be, everything else, and the place to download this or the blog post page. And as always, you will be put on my Love Bites the letter that comes out twice a month, the second and fourth Wednesday of the month. That's all you'll get. I will not bombard you with emails. I will not try to sell you things. You will be put on the list because I am trying to change the world, and I am trying to motivate you, inspire you to think differently a couple times a month other than on this podcast. If you like the podcast, you'll likely love the love letter. Most people love it. I call that one Love Bites because it comes twice a month. If you want to get it every single week, if you love it, if you start getting it and go, oh my God, I can't wait to get these, you can get it every week and just pay $19.99 for the year. So it's up to, and you get a free course I have called Five to Thrive Relationships Edition, which is a $19.99 value on its own. I think it's a no-brainer, but it's up to you. So, and let's talk about if you want to get the masterclass, the bundle, all the things that are in there, if that's something that you want to do and go deeper and really, really work on your confirmation bias. So again, it's $8. You can get it again. It'll be in all the places I just mentioned. And my Patreon in the different tiers get different things. You would get all of it if you paid the $8. Tier one in my Patreon, the Inner Circle, is going to get, so there's a guided visualization, which is really, it's me doing a guided visualization. There's journaling prompts, and there's a, which there's like 15 to 20 journaling prompts to help you dig deeper. And there's a quick reference guide of confirmation, common confirmation bias patterns in different relationships and what else might be true. Okay. So there's that. If you're in tier two, which is my love accelerator, you'll get everything in tier one, plus a 5-minute reframe practice. It's like a mini script exercise I did. There's a bias tracker worksheet. It's a 7-day kind of bias tracker, and a boundary booster worksheet, because boundaries tend to come up a lot with this, I realized. And so I made up a boundary worksheet for you to work on. And then if you're in tier three, which is my VIP Love Lab, you get everything in tier one and two, plus a relationship reflection worksheet where you're rewriting the narrative kind of thing, a self-compassion script when you realize you've been wrong, kind of how to work through that. And there's a confirmation bias 5-day detox challenge. I know. So all of that, thank you very much. And again, or you could pay, if you're not in Patreon and you don't want to be, you can pay $8 and get that masterclass, all of it together. And that's it for today. Thank you again for being here. I'm really hoping last week and this week got you really got your learn on with this. I'm trying to reinforce what I said last week and have this week kind of all feel like a piece, but stand alone, but feel like a piece. As always, I'm so grateful to be here with you. If no one told you today, you are worthy of love. You deserve love. You deserve to be in loving, reciprocal, connected relationships. And I'm here to help. All right. Have an amazing week, and I'll talk to you really soon.
Thank you for listening to the Relationships Made Easy podcast with wonderful me, Dr. Abby Metcalf. And I've got two quick things to say. Just give me one more minute. First, I love spending this time with you, and I work hard to make sure every single episode is going to help you move from any feelings of frustration or resentment or anxiety to that connected, hopeful confidence. That's always my goal. So if you have any ideas for a future episode or just want to say hi, let me know what the podcast is doing for you. Anything. You can email me at abby@abbymetcalf.com. How simple is that? And the second thing I want to say is if you like the podcast, you're going to go crazy for my book. My book is really good. I'm really proud of it. You can find it on Amazon or on my website under the shop section on my website at abbymetcalf.com. It's called Be Happily Married, Even If Your Partner Won't Do a Thing. And even if your partner will do a thing, the book will still really help you. So that's it. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you soon.